I'm Erling Wold, pastor in Garden Grove, California. My wife chose the theme because she knows I like to whistle sometimes. It's called Whistling in the Dark. I thought it'd be neat if all of us could hum Amazing Grace, just one stanza, and I'll whistle. And then we'll all hum the second one, and whoever wants to whistle will join. So we'll begin with whistling. Okay, let's start. Someone hum. Normally don't like to be in the dark for long. We've heard lots of things from Walt. We should know something about his past. When he was a college student, he perfected a parachute. His best associate friend said he'd test it for him. So Walt said, take it up in this plane I'm renting, 9,000 feet, jump, count to 10. I'll give you a walkie-talkie. We can converse when you're coming down, and I'll pick you up in the pickup in that pasture there. So up he went, out he jumped, pulled the cord, counted to 10. After he'd counted to 10, nothing happened. And over the walkie-talkie, Walt could hear his pal say, bet the pickup won't be there either. Then he discovered girls. When McDonald's had a special after 6 months of dating, he took Alice over. A girl walked in. He looked at her and said, have you ever seen anyone as homely as she? And Alice got uptight. She said, have you lost my sister? Oh, he said, I'm so sorry I didn't notice family resemblance. And then he met his bride-to-be. He didn't know quite how to propose to her. Finally, he blurted out, would you like to be buried in our family plot? And then she sort of agreed, so he said, you know, I'm a little anemic. She said, that's okay. She said, you go to your church, I'll go to mine. And then they got to be married. At the service, an old guy in Baltimore flipped the old black book, came to the baptismal service, was quite unaware where he had gone, and turned the page and it said the words he read. Dost thou renounce this devil and all his works and all his ways? And then when it was such a consternation to Brother Walt that when he asked him, wilt thou have this woman? Walt did. He wilted. Well, that took 5 minutes to help him recover. Well, my qualifications for speaking on this subject stem from my near-fatal ocean accident 9 years ago and the persistent pain it has brought following my recovery from paralysis. I want to read just a bit of something I've written. I won't read the rest of it, but just to sort of catch the pace. Pain walks with me and works with me in all of my waking moments. Everything I am and think and have goes through its filter system. Pain has a determined and destructive life all of its own. All of its energies seem to be marshaled against me. Pain fights to paralyze me, to demean me, to debilitate me, to destroy me, to make me less than human. Pain causes anger, despair, depression, doubt. Pain becomes heavy, hurting, haunting. Pain creates anxiety, loneliness, self-pity, resentment. Pain cuts into my self-image, reduces my play, saps my energy, drains my emotions, and tries to inhibit all of my relationships. And when I'm worn out fighting it, It tries to bring me into frustration, apathy, and indifference. Under these incessant attacks in me and perhaps in you, persistent questions come boldly in and pause for answers. Is God really good? Does God make mistakes? Why should I be trapped like this? Why should this happen to me? Am I being punished? Does prayer have any value? Is there any way out? This is the age of the disabled. But if you're really honest, every one of us is marked with a disability. Some of you wear glasses. Some are hard of hearing. Some living under stress. Some have pains in their tummy. Some have marks of tragedy in their past that numbs them and quite destroys them. When Marge and I go around talking to conferences, conventions, retreats, I thought of one on Vashon Island. Some of the finest women from all of Washington State. 350 for a 3-day weekend retreat. After the first night session, women came at us till 1 in the morning. Had I had the fortitude, they would have kept on coming till morning. I came to realize every single one of them was being destroyed by pain. A lad across the street, only 17. I guess he got kicked out of school. About 2 months ago, he moved. I didn't know where he left, where he had gone. Before I came, word came that he tossed himself off the parapet of the parking place in the Anaheim Stadium, just a mile from our home. And the fellow 2 doors down, a young married man called Phil, said, "I always thought that would happen to him." Dr. Rognes was a president of Luther Seminary. Now he's emeritus. He says, "Why should my brother and his wife lose their Jimmy at 14, now Diane at 17 from brain tumors? Why should it have been our son Paul, who at 24 was struck down in a fatal accident? He had gotten an Oxford scholarship on his way home, 5 miles from home, stopped on a hill downtown St. Paul, got out of his car to check something, and someone hit him. Why should my friend's lovely daughter become emotionally unbalanced and take her own life just before her baby was to be born? And my cousin's brilliant son at the university lose his bearings and commit suicide?" All of us are aware of this. I presume that's why we came tonight, because we feel this is a chord that strikes something deep down inside all of us. But then I read the comments of America's most famous doctor in Hansen's disease, leprosy. He's Dr. Brand at Carville, Louisiana, at the asylum there. He speaks about the self-abuse of those who have leprosy. He tried to make a hand, spending 4 years at it, with all the intricacies of the nervous system, 4 years and $1 million, and gave up. And Brand says, "Thank God for inventing pain. It's the paragon of his inventive genius." I had a neurosurgeon, 14 years of postgraduate study. Even his name makes you bow. His name, he was a Lebanese, Francois Herve. Set it to music. And he, with all of his studies, says the nervous system is such an intricate thing, he said, "It awes me. We don't know the ABCs of it yet." A writer called De Cazal said, "There is no moment at which God doesn't present himself under the guise of some suffering. We're always taken by surprise. Could we pierce the veil and were we vigilant and attentive, God would reveal himself continuously to us, and we would rejoice in his action in everything that happened to us. In every circumstance and occurrence, we would say, Dominus est. In everything that happens, we'd say, this is the Lord. It is the Lord. In all circumstances, we would find a gift of God." Therefore, with that as prologue, on the one hand, God dignifies all of human pain. His son, in the Gospel of the Old Testament, called Isaiah, has an intriguing title, Suffering Slave of Human Beings. And if you hear the cadences of this liturgy, this litany, I think it's the profoundest thing in the Bible, except perhaps one little phrase from Priscilla that she wrote, I think, in the second of Hebrews, where it also talks about this Messiah, despised, rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with pain, as one from whom men hid their faces, despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs, carried our sorrows. We esteemed him stricken, smitten by God. He beat him and afflicted. He was wounded for our transgressions, bruised for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that made us whole, and with his stripes we are healed. It was the will of the Lord to bruise him. He put him to grief. Luther called God Deus absconditus and Deus revelatus, the hidden God and the revealed God. Real God hidden, unveiled in the cross. The hidden God that we cannot see. That depth that can never be explained. Revelation 20, when it describes the eternal God, it just says he sits upon the throne. From his presence, everything flees away. He is indescribable. But I think it struck me most profoundly when Wiesel, is that Wiesel, the Jewish writer? Wiesel. And that awesome statement about the Jewish rabbis at the end of the Great War met together, have a trial on God for letting 6 million Jews be exterminated. And they had a long court. And when the case had its explanations made, there was dead silence for a long time. And the chief rabbi finally said, I think he should be killed. He is worthy of death. No one moved. And they all sat there 5 minutes. And then the chief rabbi said, now let's go worship him. That's Luther. The hidden and the revealed. We cannot dig him when he hides himself. But we know that he loves. That's what he's unveiled. And that's why some suffering can be accepted as if it's a gift. One of you has a phrase from Philippians. Would you read it, please?
I have. So receive him in the Lord with all joy and honor such men, for he nearly died for the work of Christ.
That's not the verse, Philippians 2, the end of it. It is granted to you, not only...
Philippians.
Yeah, Philippians 2, remember?
It says 1:29-30.
Did I? One second. Is that what you're reading?
Yes.
I'm sorry. It's the one at the end where it says, well, I should have checked that a double time. I thought it was. It's the one that says about, it is given to you the privilege to suffer for him. Someone find it faster than I. Philippians, that last section of one of the chapters. Yeah, it's one. It's the end of one. For the sake of Christ, it has been granted to you. It has been grace to you.
All right, here it is.
Yeah, I think you had the wrong verse.
For it was granted to you that for the sake of Christ, you should not only receive in him, but also suffer for his sake, engaged in the same conflict which you saw and now hear to be.
Okay. Paul says that suffering is the gift of God. You're graced, he said, to suffer, right? That's the same as the grace of the cross. Second verse. That's Philippians, the end of the first chapter. Next.
First Peter. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, that you should follow in his steps.
Okay, Romans 8:17.
And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him.
1 Corinthians 12.
If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together.
Hebrews 2.
For it was fitting that he, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons to glory, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through suffering.
Yeah. Perfection comes through suffering. What does the word perfect mean? When Jesus in the 5th of Matthew, end of the Sermon of the Mount, first chapter, says that he wants all of us to be perfect, does it mean a halo? What do you think it means? Complete. Okay, press it more. The word in the Greek is teleos. We get telos, the end. What does that mean to you? End.
Fulfillment or fullness.
Fulfillment. You have found your niche. Does it mean you're perfect? No. You have found your destination. The reason why you live and exist is like someone saying, aha, I have found why God has placed me here. Maybe it's a ministry of suffering. Whatever it is. It means you're on target. Peter and Judas both betrayed Jesus. One came back to his senses and said, I'm going to throw in my lot with him. That's perfection. You have found the reason why you're an existent. Teleos. When Jesus told Ananias to baptize St. Paul, he said, I'm going to show him how much he has to suffer for my name's sake. That's kind of an awful assignment, isn't it? That was his end. That was his perfection, to become a person who carried the cross for other people. So on the one side, there's a dignity to human pain. Jesus was messed up with it. He was called a slave of it. He tied himself tight to it. But on the other side, the Bible has a law of health. When Jesus came, he was called Shalom, peace. And peace means totality. Shalom means entirety, prosperity, health, happiness. Everything your heart craves. God's dream, when Jesus breathes on people, he wants them shalom. In the 4th of Matthew, it says they brought all their sick. We'll read that in just a moment. And he healed every single one of them. And illnesses and sicknesses sometimes can be caused by Satan. Will someone read Luke 13:16?
And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?
Yeah. Satan bound for 18 years. Whenever you're sick, you may discover the enemy. In Ephesians chapter 6, there's an intriguing passage where St. Paul, in the 6 pictures he has of the church, finalizes it, calling the church an army. And he says they fight against principalities and powers, energies let loose from the headquarters of the evil one. Now, that's pretty all-encompassing, isn't it? When we fight illnesses of any kind, or distractions, or sins, or shadows, behind it is the urging presence of his satanic majesty, whom the Bible calls Prince of this world. It's interesting, when I asked a host of doctors once in a hospital in the spring for suggested books on medicine that I might read just for my own edification, out of the 10 books listed, 4 were by Dr. Paul Tournier, the old psychiatrist from Switzerland. I saw his latest book on retirement and death in the library. Paul Tournier says something very interesting in The Shadow of His End. There are many doctors who, in their struggle against disease, have had, like me, the feeling that they were confronting not something passive, but a clever, resourceful being. Tournier is a Christian. He says, I'm battling a clever, resourceful being. Jesus battled Satan. He said he saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. He wept before the body of Lazarus. He wept or he groaned in the spirit, he wept before city of Jerusalem. And I often have thought he saw the shadow. If you read the 8th and 9th chapters of St. Matthew, you'd be gripped by kind of an awesome reality. Listen to the list in just two chapters, that Jesus healed the leper, Peter's mother-in-law, and then he has an interlude where Matthew says he took our infirmities and bore our diseases, our lack of ease. Two demoniacs, a paralytic. I was paralyzed for weeks, totally incapable of moving. A ruler's daughter-in-law, two blind men, a demoniac, in two chapters. And at the end of that 9th chapter and the beginning of the 10th, when Jesus sent out his chosen representatives, he only gave them one assignment at that moment. Would you read that, Mark, please?
And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every infirmity. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plenty, but the laborers are few. Pray therefore the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." And he called to him his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every infirmity.
Read that last verse again. Interestingly, he mentions all these folk in the 8th and 9th chapter, and when he starts the 10th chapter, St. Matthew picks up only one assignment. It's very intriguing.
And he called to him his 12 disciples and gave to them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every infirmity.
Interesting, isn't it? In the Corinthian letter, Paul even calls the cross the energy of God. And the energy was given the 12 and the 70 to go out and release people from their diseases. Now, what have I discovered through my experience? I've discovered the kind of a God about whom Dorothy Sayers writes, "Whatever reason God chose to make man as he is, limited and suffering and subject to sorrows and death, God had the honesty and courage to take his own medicine. Whatever game he is playing with his creation, he has kept his own rules and played fair. He could exact nothing from persons that he hasn't exacted from himself. He has himself gone through the whole of human experience, from the trivial irritations of family life and the cramping restrictions of hard work and lack of money, to the ultimate of pain and humiliation, defeat, despair, and death. When he was a man, he played the man. He was born in poverty and died in his grace and thought it all worthwhile." What have I discovered? I discovered that I could make it. There were 10 of us hit by a storm that struck Mexico and created giant waves. For some reason, though, 9 had passed before me, 2 washed up dead, and I was number 10. They hadn't closed the beach till I broke my neck. My wife had a very clear vision of my injury months before it happened. So when my neurosurgeon said I shouldn't be after 6 weeks, Marge knew I'd make it. And I began my struggle. The amazing thing is that when you're visible and are available to the mind of God, the possibility of amazing things are quite awesome. Because I made it. And that's something I'll thank my God for all the days of my life. I know who it was that saved me. I saw a light brighter than the noonday sun cascading down on my right side out into the sea, and I recognized the presence. is I know whom I can thank. If you don't know whom you can thank or whom you can relate to, it's kind of tough. I was in Glendale some time ago. I was asked to visit a man called John. John is an extremely handsome fellow, 6'6". He was just about to start college. He went north of LA to Ventura to board surf. When he got there, the water was quite placid, so he decided to dive in. He had long hair. I like hair any length. When he dove in, he broke his neck. All that was visible in the foam was his hair. And somebody, passerby, saw the hair, walked in, turned him over, pulled him up on the beach, left him there. I guess he called paramedics because somebody came for him and took him to the hospital. When I saw him, he'd been 18 months, a quadriplegic. So I was trying to talk to him about Jesus because he didn't know him, though he had saved his life. What amazed me was he has a male companion who straps him into a wheelchair. He drives the wheelchair with his breath. He goes to Glendale College. He wants to become a counselor. The thing that kept coming out of his lips every 50 minutes, it's an obsession. He says, I wonder who it was that saved me. I'd like to know his name. I'd really like to thank him. That's all he said. I know why the guy ran. You know, you're responsible for a person. If you drag him out and he breaks his neck worse, you could be sued. So he got the best thing you do. He got help for him. But it's kind of beautiful when you know the one to whom you can give your gratitude. Without question in my life as to who it was that saved me. What about you, brother? You've lived through some awesome experiences, much worse than mine. And the spirit that I've seen come from you is radiant, joyful. I know you hurt, and I know it isn't just light, it's a lot of shadow. Maybe you could share something that is in your heart.
Well, you know, first, I guess, when you say something like that, I think just the opposite, of course. I think your experience is more worse than mine. I suppose I should just say what my experiences have been very briefly. I'm a diabetic of many years, about 30 years, and we've had complications with the disease in the last several years, including a major heart attack, bypass graft, heart surgery, and a leg amputation, and then legal blindness. Most of those things happened within the last 4 or 5 years. One of the things that strikes me about the difference between us is that I have relatively little pain. Person to you. I mean, I know you live with pain a lot. I guess I've learned a lot of things through this experience, too. First of all, I suppose one's appreciative not only for an ultimate support, but also for all the penultimate supports, family, other friends, rally around. I think one very quickly realizes that you're a part of a human web. Sometimes that human web is a web of suffering. Other times it's a web of joy. We realize that we alternate oftentimes between those different phases of life. I think one is tempted, of course, to self-pity. But you come very quickly to realize that that's a kind of futile emotion, a wasted emotion. It doesn't go anyplace. And you mentioned Elie Wiesel. I was thinking of him tonight, too, because at one point I found the most comfort, really, in reading about other people's sufferings to make me much more aware that suffering goes far beyond what you're experiencing. And then I think that makes the connection that you've already made. You ask what is deepest in the heart of God. It's God's own care and compassion. Which reaches its depths in the suffering of Christ and crucifixion.
I think that there, in one sense, there's no answer to the question about evil. We do speak about evil in terms of satanic powers. But we don't get rational answers that really help us with some of these questions. One theologian, Phil Hefner, whom some of you are familiar with, says that in a sense, to the Christian, evil is embarrassment. And perhaps it's embarrassment to God, too, in a sense. Because I think in the created world, there is freedom not only in our own person, but there's freedom in the created world itself. So things go awry. And it's not that there's some good explanation for that, it's simply something that happens. So the more important thing that comes out of that is the identification of one with another. And I think that one of the things I've learned is to be much more sensitive to what other people are experiencing, to their sufferings. I realized quickly that I could go down the corridor of the hospital and I wouldn't have to go more than two doors to find someone that was experiencing something I thought was far worse than what I was experiencing. And that there are reservoirs there that we all have which enable us to deal with these things far beyond the limits that we thought that we could manage. You know, there's a depth there. I guess I like Tillich's sense of the depth of God. God is that depth of life that goes beyond all human understanding.
Thank you very much.
That's why my second premise is, be sure you take the initiative. I like Brother Jacob in the Old Testament, who wrestling with the angel said, I won't let you go until you bless me. Near us was the famous coach, John Wooden, UCLA, 8 out of 11 national championships. He developed something unearthed by another coach called the full court press, that whoever controls the tempo controls the game. So you press, you push. There were two others right near me who broke their necks the same time. One, a Baptist pastor's son on drugs, 22, and a kid, 17, who was the town goof-off in high school. They never made it. I'm not sure if they were more severely injured, but the 17-year-old wouldn't stand pain. He wouldn't take therapy. And the other guy was on drugs, had been so badly that he listened to hard rock, even the ICU that let him listen to it till 3 in the morning. And when therapy time came, he didn't have energy enough to attempt to find a way back to health. It's interesting that Jesus asked the question, do you want to be made whole, a number of times. I knew a gal who was the wife of a very important college official who was sick 35 years, just the years that he was vice president. The day he retired, she was well. By being sick, she got his interest and his attention. And that became her dedication. 1 out of 7 verses in the New Testament have to do with health, wholeness. There are 48 healing miracles mentioned, 18 in Mass. If God's that interested in it, we aren't God. All we can do is ask, but we can ask like a persistent child that puts the squeeze on mom or dad. I love that story. I'm sure you've read it, about Norman Cousins. About 20 years ago, he got crippling arthritis, was given up to die. Someone, I guess, told him to try 3 things. 1, will to live. 2, intravenous injections of vitamin C. And 3, belly laughter. So they put him in ICU and he used to watch Laurel and Hardy. So they moved him to the nearby hotel. He waited 16 years after he was healed before he published his account in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's very prestigious, internationally known. He got 3,000 letters back from doctors commending him. He said, I'm not sure what healed me, the laughter, the vitamin C, or the will to live. It didn't matter. He got healed. Now, the reason that I knew it was somewhat authentic was he was editor of Saturday Review. I've read him for years. He sold it, and he joined the UCLA medical staff. as a professor without medical training, just his own, the 18, 20 years he's had since he fully recovered. So you put the full court press on God. Jacob really put the half Nelson on the deity. You know what the half Nelson is? No one does. I thought you were all Scandinavian. Three, you let pain chip away on you. I love that picture of Michelangelo. When he saw a block of marble, he saw the body that wanted to be released. And he chipped away all of the incidental material. And when you see even copies like at Forest Lawn, it just amazes me. Working on corpses, he knew the body to perfection. And he really makes the muscles ripple. But you strip away all the excess baggage. And sometimes pain does that because you discover your new priorities. Number four, reach out to the family of God. Sometimes when I'm hurt really bad, I'm perfectly normal except I'm abnormal. No, I'm perfectly normal except for the pain. And it's very inhibiting. You got to fight through it. So sometimes when I'm exhausted, work hard, travel lots, Marge lays her hands on me and prays. Energy flows from other people. There's no question about it. Jesus did it all the time. Someone touched me, said Jesus. Energy flowed out of me. The touch of a human being. I had read that Bressler, the UCLA specialist in pain, said every human being needs 10 hugs a day. I was up in Wisconsin at a retreat center a short time ago. The head nun said we need 12. They can't all be bad. That was a bad one. But to make the family of God a family of enthusiasts, I love that. I just discovered that the Sioux Indians used to have a very biblical practice. In the village was a tent, healing tent, with 14 stones they heated very hot and made it into a sauna. And there the family gathered. And someone, oldest member perhaps, was in charge. First they thanked God for his creation. They didn't rape the earth. They loved it. Mother Earth. Then they thanked God for the family. And then they focused on the illness or pain of someone there and did something that really blew me into orbit. You know, after the resurrection, it said Jesus came and breathed on his disciples and said, receive the Holy Spirit. That's what they do. The head person breathes on the wound. I tried that on a woman called Anita, who had a brain tumor, and she was supposed to go into surgery and then have chemotherapy. And for the first time in my life, I became a Sioux Indian. I came from North Dakota, my brothers. And I breathed on her three times in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And she was healed. Now, whether my breathing did it, I don't know. I couldn't care less. I'll keep on doing it. If the Sioux could do it, I'm a primitive American. Five, create a healing environment. All of us are temples of God. And that's why I like to think of an altar inside us, and there will be prayer and music and dance and joy and the people of God inside us and around us. Yehudi Menuhin is now in San Francisco, famous violinist, teacher of the Kodaya method. He said to the school board recently, music should be brought in before any other activity in the classroom. Not canned music, but music you participate in. He said, if you sing at the beginning of school, students are years ahead in mathematics and in other intellectual pursuits. Music does something for everyone. There is no civilization without it. It humanizes the whole person. The lungs, the voices, the imagination. In ancient Greece, they had music in gymnasium before they started their academic studies for the day. And now we're cutting out music and the creativity of poetry and all the cultural stuff that makes a nation great and makes it creative. He said, we've tried it in schools, and when we have music, violence drops because kids adapt and adjust to one another. Environment. Six, some techniques, and I'm going to hurry along. Acupuncture. I've tried that. The Chinese acupuncturist who worked on me said, if four doesn't help, I'll stop. They didn't. But I saw a study that you need it daily for 4 months. But acupuncture releases endorphins, which are a natural chemical, like opiates. The head of surgery at UCLA, the second man in surgery at UCLA, studied acupuncture in China. He does it with half of his patients. He's an Anglo. He said, I saw them do it in China, do heart surgery, and the guy's sipping tea. He said, acupuncture. I just suggest that. By hypnosis, I tried that too. I know it can help. Hypnosis can be a way of diverting pain. Biofeedback, relaxation therapy, diet, exercise, the Pritikin method, lifestyle change. We've had studies on stress here. And one more, and I'm going to let you talk. And I think the ultimate is to get lost in the mission. When I work all the time. At least when I'm not here. Because getting lost in the mission is very therapeutic. You've heard of Schweitzer, who fed ants on his desk after dinner every night with bread from the table. I don't know your destiny, he said, but one thing I do know. To be really happy, one must seek and find a way to serve. St. Joseph's Hospital in Burbank has Queen Mary in the entrance. He's down the hall in a side hall. But on his statue is a sign I've never forgotten. Caritas Christi urget me. The love of Christ urges me, compels me, pushes me. I like that. Brother Joe hasn't got much light, but he keeps urging himself down there in the corridor. Mary's got first place. Dr. Malone, psychiatrist, Atlanta, Georgia. Almost every emotional problem can be summed up in one particular bit of behavior. It's the cry, for God's sake, love me. That's all. One may go through a million manipulations to get it to happen. Healthy people are those who are able to walk around and look for someone to love. He doesn't say limitation. You can be armless, legless. You're healthy if you're free to look for someone to love. I was with the Air Force about a dozen times all over the world as visiting firemen for a month or 2 weeks or 1 week. And the places I'll never forget were areas called the Air Rescue Squadron, buildings at every one of the air bases. Folks that register for the Air Rescue Squadron are folks who never get far on the upward scale. They stay pretty much where they have been. They learn everything, scuba diving, how to survive in water, ice, freezes, drop from planes, knives, guns. On the entrance of every one of the buildings, the same little statement. We serve that others might live. To me, that's the epitome of human living. The suffering servant came to give his life as a ransom for everyone. And we little people try to become his followers. Okay. Question, comment, suggestion, addition. Yes?
I guess what bothers me about your conviction that Jesus saved you is that what happened to Jesus and those that didn't make it? And then the two guys in the hospital that couldn't take him. you know, that, I mean, that there's a question of justice there.
Okay. I'll take this last one first. There's always a question of justice. I washed dishes twice this past week with a lovely young man, 6+, called Paul, who happened to be on a street in Atlanta when some kid broke the law and hit him. That was unjust. He was in a coma for weeks. He can't balance well. His speech is very bad. God didn't will that. He let it go through his fingers, like it says in Job. So that justice, if a guy takes drugs and destroys his body, he cannot face reality when he's hit by a wave. You know, you got to take responsibility for wrong living. If I drink a lot of booze and destroy my stomach, the Lord may not automatically redeem it. I may die from cirrhosis of the liver, right?
Yeah, I guess an example of possible injustice is that, you know, maybe he did that because he was physically abused as a small child.
Baptist pastor's son, evangelist, maybe? I cannot say. Yeah. And that's again sin. I agree. Sin comes in shadows, and you pay for the sins of other people. Jesus did to the ultimate. The first, God has no favorites. That I know. All I know is what happened. Marred, I had never been sick. I used to run 2 miles every morning at 6. I worked like a madman, 18 hours a day. My dad was like that. I followed him. And all I know is that she had a clear vision that I'd be severely injured. You see, she was called to become directress of women's work in our national church. We prayed about it for weeks, and finally one Saturday night, I said, I think you ought to go. She lived in Minneapolis, I live in Garden Grove. And she said, I feel the same. The next night, we both switched and said, I think that, we both said on Saturday night, you shouldn't go. Sunday night, we said, we think you should go. So she accepted the call. A month later, she said, that's insane. A month before she was to be installed in Cincinnati, I was to be keynote speaker. And it seemed insane, so she said, I'm not going to go. But when she said that, that time the Lord told her, you'll need the job. And that I'd be severely injured. Not how. And she never told me. Could be a wish fulfillment, you know. She never told me, but she called two women, one president of women's group, long distance. And then she went to see a saint of the church and wept on her shoulder. And she's very controlled. This was a devastating thing. So just a month after installation, I broke my neck, or it was broken for me, on the beach. God doesn't have favorites. Maybe he tried to speak to the other ones too, and they didn't listen. The only thing I know in paradise, no one's going to have any gripes with God. Like Sayers says, he always plays fair. He took the same medicine. If you have any further questions, I'll be happy to talk to you. Anybody else? Our time is almost up. Any questions? Was it a painful experience? Anybody? Yes?
I know that Jesus saved me too, and it was a different circumstance, and at the time I didn't see the light. I was only looking backwards that I knew. Mm-hmm. As a child, I accepted him, and then in my late teens, I went away, ruled by false philosophies and thought that God was something that man invented. But the Holy Spirit never leaves you once he comes to you. And so when I got very depressed in my marriage and tried to commit suicide, I was stopped. And it was years later that I came back to God. I know it was Jesus who saved me. Now, the Bible tells us that we're all created by God, but only those who have accepted Jesus are in God's family, only those who are the children of God. Others are children of Satan until they come. And the sins of the parents can go on for some generations. Now,
if they persist in hating.
Yeah, if they don't. See, God calls. Everyone has the opportunity to come. Jesus came to save the whole world, and it is God's perfect will that everyone comes, but everyone is not going to come. Paul said, I become all things to all men, that by all means I might save some. so, it should be clear to you that not all are going to be saved. And that it is our major mission to share the love of Jesus and bring in as many as we can. It just overrides my whole lifetime. Like he saved me.
Yeah.
He saved me from taking my own life when the powers of darkness were out to get me. If I didn't know this.
Thank you.
Anyone else? That's beautiful. There are a lot of stories here, a lot of histories, I know. Did I anesthetize you? Are you awake? Anybody?
I was thinking about the verse in 2 John. I can't think exactly how it goes. I'm sure you do. Where he says that God wishes you to prosper and be in good health.
Yes. Shalom is his dream. You fight for it. But I say sometimes we get struck and we have to come to grips with the reality. But you fight for health. That's God's dream. Shalom is wholeness. That's the name of Jesus. He wants us well. And the sinister powers let loose from the headquarters of evil are against the will of God. And that's the shadow. And that's one of the difficult things. But in Job it says that Satan came into the presence of God and asked to put his dirty hands on Job. And God says you can touch his stuff, but you can't have him. And he had some ripping done in his family and in his gut. But he came through flying colors. Yes. Okay, we're not going to keep you longer because it's 2:03 and you're supposed to be at another session. Thanks so much for coming and sharing your life with this hour.